And welcome back. As we begin the program tonight, let me remind all of you that people are being killed, butchered, slaughtered, massacred right now by the Zionist Israeli army in the Gaza city area and in Gaza in general. People are dying at this moment, and they've been dying for the last almost 10 days now. Actually, they've been dying for many, many years, over 60, if you become realistic about this whole thing. My first guest tonight is, in my opinion, one of the world's premier, if not preeminent, revisionist historians. He is an extraordinary journalist and a very brave and courageous man and a great American patriot. His name is Michael Hoffman. He is making a return visit tonight after far too long away from this program. He has a book that many of you may have heard about. If you haven't, let me tell you about it. It is 1,100 pages long. It is hardcover. It is entitled Judaism Discovered. It has been banned by Amazon.com. Amazon pressured by a rabbi to stop all sales of the book. So we would look to you folks to help move sales along and pay close attention this hour. We're going to hear a lot of very interesting and important things from Michael Hoffman. Let me read a little bit from his homepage about the book because it is important. Judaism Discovered differs from virtually all the writing on this subject, which has preceded it in the past 100 years. It does this by means of empiric and strictly factual discovery of Judaism's deepest operational and spiritual secrets, and in particular, Judaism's extremely circumspect epistemology of concealment. Let me impart to you a great secret. Whoever hates Judaics perpetuates the role and the rule of the rabbis. This secret is documented and explained in my book. I have sought to break new ground and to anticipate the counter-arguments of rabbinic and Judeo-Christian critics. It has been my objective to craft Judaism Discovered so that there is no possibility of a rational refutation of it. While it's true that the book's evidence and arguments can be twisted, misrepresented, and demonized with the usual underhanded ADL-style smears and falsification, the information in Judaism Discovered cannot be easily disarmed because much of it pertains to epistemology, viz., Judaism's knowledge of itself, and the ways in which it responds to discovery. Welcome back to the program, Michael.
Thank you, Jeff. It's good to be here.
You're a busy man.
Yes, I am.
We have up at the guest section at Rents.com under Michael's name. His name goes right to his homepage. And I've also posted the two-part review done by Brother Nathaniel Kapner. And they're very good reviews, and at the bottom of each we'll tell you how to get this book. Again, it's 1,100 pages. It is a book literally unprecedented in modern history, and I don't think we'll see another like it. In general, Michael, how has the book been received by honest critics?
Well, it's really difficult to gauge the response because, in general, it's been blacked out in the sphere of the printed word and publications that are what you would call a hard copy.
Yeah.
Online, the response has been very good, and in general, the sales have been strong, in spite of the fact that there's been a blackout in effect, because largely what happens is the sales, I think, are based on word of mouth. A person gets the book, they find that it meets their expectations, and they then notify other people. It's kind of like a good carpenter in a local town who doesn't do any advertising, but he's always busy because the work is considered to be adequate and people regard him as honest. And I think the same thing has happened to my book, Judaism Discovered.
That's a very, very wisely put way to say it all. This, in a way, is your book is rather like the Mearsheimer and Walt book, except yours has been banned. Theirs at least got published. Both raise extremely interesting, fascinating, and relevant, if not, well, life-depending information. I mean, we've got to understand this thing, because right now, as we look at the world, we see no longer a stealth or background effort. This is an in-your-face effort now by the New World Order, led by world Zionism to literally take control of most of the so-called civilized world. We have to understand what's happening. We must understand the enemy. Anyone who slaughters and massacres people, controls nations, starts world wars, finances both sides, and I could go on for hours, is the enemy of peace, the enemy of freedom, of enlightenment. And this species is going to fail unless we understand what is happening to it and how it has been co-opted and how these United States, these formerly United States have been taken over literally and are now the cash cow of world Zionism. And I don't mind telling you that. I've been telling you that for many years. And I don't know if you agree with all that or not, Michael, but have at it.
Well, my own concern, of course, is Orthodox Judaism and the role that it's playing both in the Holocaust in Gaza and in many other spheres of its influence. And we could begin with I think, what is a hidden component in the war on the Palestinians, because I find that most of the rhetoric that's been generated in favor of the Palestinians is largely futile. As an observer of this scene since at least the late 1970s, I'm aware of how many massacres and war crimes the Israelis have perpetrated, and I'm also aware of the thin margin of people who protest these massacres. But I think the reason why we don't get anywhere with our protests and with our activism is because we're only dealing with symptoms and we're not getting to the root. And the root of the problem is actually Orthodox Judaism. Now, a lot of people believe that Zionism and Orthodox Judaism are inimical to one another, but actually they were synthesized by a remarkable figure in the 19th century who I study in my book, Moses Hess. And Moses Hess was someone that Karl Marx called my communist rabbi. And Hess was both a Zionist and a Talmudist and a communist, all in one. So He took the Hegelian process, and he synthesized these two supposedly opposing theses of Zionism and Orthodox Judaism and reconciled them in a model which was actually adopted beginning in the late 19th and early 20th century, and which we're still seeing today as the aptly named Rabbi Kook developed what's known as religious Zionism in the 20th century in the Israeli state. Mm-hmm. But the roots of the violence that we're seeing, the grotesque contempt for the Palestinian people, is in Orthodox Judaism. And Orthodox Judaism has had an enormous influence over the Zionist state, because Zionism is something like a shadow or a reverberation of Orthodox Judaism. So that there are certainly plenty of secular Zionists who may say that they don't follow the Talmud and they don't care very much about rabbis, but at the same time, as a process of osmosis, of being part of the culture and of the tradition, they have picked up this Talmudic racism. And until Arabs and Muslims and Christians and everyone who's concerned about justice in the Middle East begins to scrutinize the religion of Orthodox Judaism rather than falling for the line that it's an Old Testament religion of justice, even if it may be somewhat harsh or pharisaical, until we do that, we're going to continue to have a missing element in this war on the Palestinians, who are basically being treated as crap. And when I look at what's happening in Gaza now, we can see that their life is extraordinarily devalued. If the shoe was on the other foot and hundreds of Israeli civilians were dead, and four or five Palestinians were dead as a result of rocket fire, the entire West would be up in arms. What is the disparity? There's more to this than simply the fact that they control Congress or that they have an inordinate influence over the media. The roots are in the rabbinic texts of Orthodox Judaism for this contempt for people that they see as subhuman.
They do see them as subhuman. What was the comment by one former Israeli Prime Minister, I believe, that all the Palestinians, maybe he said all the Arabs in the world, aren't worth one Zionist, Jewish fingernail.
Yes, that was at the funeral of Baruch Goldstein, the man who slaughtered 40 Palestinians in 1994 at the Cave of the Patriarchs. And what's interesting in that particular case is how little we have any context for what's going on in Palestine and in the Israeli state right now, because the media seldom identifies the players in this action. They don't provide context. They don't provide background. So, for example, right now, one of the main players is Ehud Barak as the defense chief,
right,
who, along with the current rulers of the Israeli regime, is initiating this. But what about Barak's background? He has a background in mass murder. It isn't that we can't accept the storyline that suddenly he became livid with rage at rocket fire nobly retaliate. In fact, as far back as 1994, more Palestinians died protesting the mass murder by Baruch Goldstein in the wake of his slaughter in early 1994 than were killed at the mosque. And the slaughterer of those Palestinians was none other than Ehud Barak. Why hasn't the media supplied us with this context?
Well, we have to take a break. The answer is fairly obvious, because the media is Zionist-owned and controlled for the most part. As Michael said, the printed word now is no longer free here. It is a propaganda tool. And when you read some of the apologist material that is being proffered as journalism to the American public, you want to just retch. It's no longer objective. It's no longer journalism. It is mind manipulation. Be right back. I'm sure that many of you listening have been watching the what they call coverage of the war. First of all, it's not coverage of a war. And secondly, it's not a war. This is a massacre, which has been, by the way, in the plans, if you've been watching the stories at Rents.com, and being planned for over apparently a year and a half. This has been a very high priority issue with the Zionist Israeli government. And let's give credit to many Jews, not only in Israel, but around the world, who are protesting. A number of them joined in the anti-massacre protest in Toronto the other day. So there are good people of all faiths and all religions who can step aside and look at this as a human issue. These people are being liquidated, and it's quite clear that the ultimate plan for Gaza City is probably not too dissimilar from that which the United States visited upon Fallujah. And we do need to remember that while this country was killing 1.5 million Iraqis under the Bush-Cheney-Halliburton regime, the media here, of course, essentially looked the other way. 1.5 million people died in a Holocaust there. Granted, the number of Palestinians is quite small compared to that. Death is death. This program has always been an equal opportunity mourner. We condemn death and violence. And beyond that, we condemn evil in whatever form it takes. Michael, go ahead, please.
Well, I wanted to begin with the point that I mentioned before we broke for the commercial break, that the roots of Israeli violence are in the rabbinic texts. And the most infamous of those texts is found in the saying of Rabbi Shimon ben Yohei, which is, Tob Shib Goyim Harag, even the best of the Gentiles should all be killed.
Is this Talmudism, so to speak, to help our listeners understand, or is this Torah? What is this?
Well, they call it Torah, but actually there's the Torah that they're referring to is the oral Torah, and it's no Torah at all. It's the traditions of men, as Jesus clearly stated, that and as Isaiah stated, and as all the great prophets, Isaiah talked about those who are dealers who mix the wine with the water, and here he was talking about the elders who were in the habit of mingling a water tradition with the commands of God. And one of the confusions, I think, is that people who imagine that Israeli violence is motivated by the Old Testament. The Old Testament is anti-Israel, and Rabbinic Judaism is anti-Old Testament. Rabbinic Judaism defames Noah, it defames Abraham, it defames Isaiah, and if we have enough time, I will give you the specifics of those. But in this case, I'm talking about the Talmud, and really one of the founders, the foundational elders of Judaism, Rabbi Shimon ben Yohei, who has a holiday dedicated to him in the Israeli state.
And again, he believed that all non-Jews were not worthy of life, basically.
Exactly. They should be exterminated. And once a year, Judaics around the world gather in the Israeli state for what's called Lag BaOmer, which celebrates his birth. And there are a lot of nonsensical miracle stories associated with him. I'll just give you one very quickly. The Talmud says that during his lifetime, Rabbi Ben Shohei's lifetime, a rainbow never appeared on earth. God didn't need to show the rainbow while Rabbi Ben Yohei was alive because the rabbi was so great a person.
I see. Very good.
So great a person that his own righteousness protected the whole world and God's rainbow was not needed. And that's from the Jerusalem Talmud, Berakos 9:1. And so here we see not only an extermination warrant for genocide, but we also see this incredible egomania, which actually trumps God's creation. And if we have time, I will endeavor to document the fact that it trumps God himself.
But again,
so this is an extra Old Testament religion. It's a man-made religion. Well, the Ben Yohei statement is fairly notorious, but in my book, I go into far more recondite material. For example, from the Babylonian Talmud Sanhedrin 58b, when a non-Jew strikes a Jew, it's as if he's striking the divine presence itself. And there's also something about mass murder as a mystical technique for the attainment of ecstasy and personal experience of the divine. This came out after the 1994 Hebron massacre by the aforementioned Baruch Goldstein, when Rabbi Yitzhak Ginsburg, who's of the Chabad Lubavitch group, and he wrote a tract called Baruch HaGever, which treats atrocity as a mystical technique for the attainment of unmediated, ecstatic, and personal experience of the divine.
So they get off on genocide.
They get off on genocide, and this is, you were mentioning how this is increasingly in the open. It's in the open, but because we live in the United States of amnesia, we don't have these things brought to our attention. I'll give you an example. More than 20 years ago, Jeff, as you recall, the black leader Louis Farrakhan termed Judaism a gutter religion, and that was 20 years ago. Now, his remark has been recalled and condemned by the media almost constantly ever since.
That's
it was
right.
Even an issue in the Democrats' presidential candidates debate last February when moderator the late Tim Russert stated to Barack Obama, quote, "The problem some voters may have is, as you know, Reverend Farrakhan called Judaism a gutter religion." So here's Russert bringing up an ancient statement from Louis Farrakhan of 20 years vintage. But now watch this. During a sermon over the 2001 Passover holiday, just 7 years ago, the Shas party, a major Israeli party, their rabbi, Ovadia Yosef, exclaimed, quote, "May the holy name visit retribution on the Arab head, cause their seed to be lost and annihilate them. It is forbidden to have pity on them. We should give them missiles with relish. Annihilate these damnable ones," end quote. Jeff, who brings this up nowadays? Who confronts the Israelis with these statements? Rabbi David Batsri, director of the Magen David Yeshiva in Jerusalem, said, and I quote, "The nation of Israel is pure, and the Arabs are a nation of donkeys. They are an evil disaster, an evil devil, and a nasty affliction. The Arabs are donkeys and beasts. They are endowed with true filthiness. There is pure and there is impure, and they are impure." Now, that's from March 21st, 2006.
Well, all right, stand by right there, Michael. We'll come right back. My guest, Michael Hoffman. Talking with journalist, author, researcher, historian, scholar, Michael Hoffman. His book, Judaism Discovered, a True Landmark of Our Times, 1,100 pages hardback. You can go to his website, revisionisthistory.org. I don't call these people revisionist historians. I call them revisionist scholars just as well. You can look in guests and find reviews of the book. It is monumental. Keep in mind that the power that is seeking to dominate has forced Amazon to ban sales of the book, so we would urge all of you to support Michael Hoffman, buy a copy of the book, and certainly spread the word around if you find it something that you enjoy and are informed by. And I don't know how you can't, or you wouldn't be listening to this program. The issue of I don't know what label to use. It is tricky, and that's part of the problem. We'll just call it Zionist Israeli slaughter. It goes back a long, long way, and we're seeing the latest example of this. And I don't know exactly how to quantify it, because there are organizations like Jews Against Zionism who are adamantly opposed to Zionism. I don't think Israel should exist at all. And we can go on to that other canard, of course, about Ahmadinejad and his alleged statement, which he never made, that Israel should be wiped off the map in a physical sense. He didn't mean that. But something else I'm looking for here. Here it is. I'll get to it in just a minute. Anyway, go ahead, Michael. You made some very good points there. And by the way, all of this Talmudism, many Jews say they don't know about the Talmud. They weren't taught about these incredibly arrogant and genocidal views, that they know nothing about it, really, that it's all old history. Others on the Internet, of course, try to rewrite the Talmudic quotations in a much more sanguine fashion to make them seem superfluous, and they claim people have misinterpreted them from the old language. Not true. There are too many accurate and scholarly definitive translations around. Please go ahead.
Well, before I get into that, I just wanted to mention you brought up the president of Iran and the attribution to him, which, as you say, is erroneous, that he wanted to wipe the state of the Israeli out of existence. But again, this is notorious, like Farrakhan's statement. How many people know that the Israeli deputy defense minister, as recently as February 29th, 2008, said that there should be a Holocaust of Palestinians in Gaza? That was Matan Vilnai. He said they should be Shoah, S-H-O-A-H. And well, Steve Erlinger points out, the Hebrew word Shoah means catastrophe or Holocaust, and is rarely used for anything other than extermination.
He knew what was coming, it sounds like to me.
He knew what he was coming. He makes the statement, but you see, this is how the Israelis are protected from the consequences of their exterminating racism by the Western media, even as their critics, like Farrakhan, are eternally stigmatized. Now, as far as the Talmud being little known among Judaics, it depends on what population, what ethnicity, what geographical area you're talking about. In the United States, the majority of Judaics identify with a liberal version called Reform Judaism, and it's true, it largely is not literate in the Talmudic text. However, like Zionism, it has inherited through a process of osmosis as the cultural patrimony of the Talmud itself. It has inherited the racism and the ethnocentricity, and if it didn't, then we wouldn't see Congress being controlled in the way it is and advocating war against the Palestinians. But nonetheless, it's quite true that their majority of American Judaics do not have a close familiarity with the Talmud. However, at the same time, many of these people are very proud of the Talmud. They're proud of their heritage, and even if they have a foggy notion of it, at the same time, they say that it is a part of the tradition of their persecuted ancestors, and therefore it's worth preserving. So they have kind of a extra cerebral nostalgia for the Talmud. Now, in the Israeli state, where Orthodox Judaism has enormously more power and position as opposed to its role here in the United States, where, as I said, Reform Judaism has far more adherents. Although that's changing as liberal Judaics contracept themselves out of existence and Orthodox Judaic populations continue to grow.
That's a very important point, Michael. Yeah.
I'd also like to briefly address the idea of Judaics against Zionism. I think that where people are secular Judaics, where they are not attached to the Talmud or adherents of Orthodox Judaism, then I think that that can be sincere. However, when you have groups like the Naturai Karta and other Talmudic followers who claim to be opposed to the Israeli project for world supremacy, then I think this is where people are really being beguiled, because they're not understanding the earlier and older model of Talmudic conquest. We have to go all the way back to Bar Kokhba and his failed revolt. Originally, the Judaics, and at that time they were not, as I call them, Judaics today, because that's my way of signaling that they're counterfeit Jews, and not the vast majority of them are not actually today descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, whereas, of course, in the first century they were. And so the Jews of that era tried violence, and they tried violent resistance, and they were so thoroughly crushed in the Bar Kokhba revolt that if you read the rabbinic text, you will see that they decided to advance their cause through stealth, through guile, and through projecting these decoy texts in the Talmud, which you made reference to. There are humanitarian texts there, and there are nice brotherhood-sounding texts, but there are also hermeneutic excursuses, which indicate to those who are initiated into the rabbinic textual exegesis that these are decoy texts put there for the benefit and the consumption of the goyim. And if we're good fruit inspectors, we'll find out that the fruits of the Talmud are bad and they're racist. So that sort of undercuts at a very initial level the fact that these are just superficial texts that were placed there for the benefit of the goyim. But in terms of this competition between two differing interpretations, the New Torah Karta and other Talmudic Judaics like them represent the old school, that Bar Kokhba was crushed by a Gentile military power as represented by Rome. And so it's not really sanguine for us to proceed along the Bar Kokhba model. But once Zionism and then religious Zionism, Talmudic Zionism emerged, as I mentioned with Rabbi Kook and other theoreticians in the 20th century, it was decided that we had entered the era where Judaism could use violence to advance its cause. So we're talking about a difference in tactics, but the overall contempt for the Gentiles and the belief that Gentiles do not have a soul that is equivalent to Judaics, which is the root of all this of all of these problems.
When we come back, Michael, I want to talk about this this elitism, this arrogance, this chosen people attitude and ethos that, that permeates far too much of this planet in terms of its Jewish population.
We're they have the Neshama HaElona. Yes, I'd be glad to talk about that.
In just a minute with Michael Hoffman. Okay, and we're back with Michael Hoffman. I urge you to get a copy of his book. It is truly a monumental work. As many of you know, the effort by organized Zionism to force Jews to Israel was rather ruthless, to put it mildly. Jews living in surrounding Arab nations were not attacked by Arabs at all. The Mossad went in and attacked Jews, killed many of them, forced them to move to Israel. In fact, this kind of pressure still exists today. It's a very complicated issue. But above and beyond all of that is this unbelievable, ungodly arrogance that these people, and I'm not talking about many of you Jews out there who are absolutely opposed to this as we are. I'm talking about people who on this planet think that their worth as human beings absolutely subjugates that of any other living life form, that they are it. And other life, Goyim, in fact, is essentially just a servant class. It's like a caste system in India, but even worse than that. Go ahead, Michael, please.
Yes, well, what you're really talking about is the Neshama HaElona, which is the soul of a fully human being. And according to the rabbinic text, only a Jew would possess that status. So the rest of us are lacking this nefesh status. And that's why we can be killed. That's why Christians under Bolshevism and Palestinian and Lebanese Arabs under the Israeli military, those who have been labeled in this way, they can be killed. Let's go over to the Babylonian Talmud at Bava Metzvia 114b. Only you, the members of the Jewish people, are called men, but non-Jews are not called men. Now, the ADL and some of these other hysterical apologist groups will say that that's a made-up quote or it's taken out of context. I reproduce the original Aramaic on page 470 of my book for that quotation. We have dozens of others which give credence to this and document the fact that there is a huge disparity. You know, Jeff, the test of any law is the principle of universality. It's the feature of any law code worth anything, and that is whether we apply to ourselves what we apply to others. And the great defect of Orthodox Judaism and all of its tributaries, which are offshoots of it, Zionism and these other ideologies is that they don't do this. They have one law for the elite themselves and another law for the rest of us. And that's at the root of what we see happening in Gaza, because otherwise it's almost unexplainable, the contemptuous disregard and dismissal of, as you say, it's not a war, it's a massacre, and this disregard for it in the West. Now, in the Third World, of course, it's a burning issue, and Al Jazeera and other independent media outlets have done a pretty good job of bringing this to the attention of the public. For Westerners, it's not an issue. And it really, again, it comes back to the religion of Judaism, which is lacking in the principle of universality. It says that God is sublimated to the rabbis, the Gentiles are sublimated to the rabbis, and therefore we're all just more or less sitting ducks for them. And also the idea that there's going to be peace in the Middle East, this is really a chimera, because Judaism teaches that anyone who returns the land of Eretz Israel, as they call it, of Greater Israel, to the Gentiles, is in fact a din rodef, which is a pursuer. And a din rodef is someone who can be killed immediately. The entire nation of Palestinians have been classified en masse as din rodef, because from a halakhic point of view, that means from the point of view of rabbinic law, the man-made Talmudic-based law, a din rodef is anyone who returns the land of Palestine to the Palestinians, And they can be killed, and it's sort of a kind of a preventive attack. The apologists say is that a rodef is someone who's coming to kill you, so you kill him first. But in fact, the actual definition of a rodef is, for example, a tipster who identifies a Judaic child molester to the police.
Mm-hmm.
An unborn baby can be aborted because it's seen as pursuing its mother. Or an Israeli prime minister like Yitzhak Rabin, who signs the Oslo Accords. All of these people were regarded as rodefs. And I could give you a quotation after quotation from Shaul Mofaz, from Rabbi Druckmann in the Israeli state, that backs all of this up, that you can kill non-Jewish civilians. This was a Talmudic edict that was issued by Druckmann. And he's not some marginal crazy in the Israeli state. He has a tremendous prestige there. And he says that the Israeli army should never hesitate to kill non-Jewish civilians in order to save Jewish lives. He even quoted a Talmudic edict from the ancient Rabbi Akiva, which states, "Our lives come first." And, of course, Israeli soldiers and officers, as even the newspaper Haaretz admitted, are influenced by these halakhic ethical commandments in terms of this is how they behave towards the subject peoples. So we know there was a Nazi ideology. People have been able to trace the contempt that Hitler had for Slavs and for Judaics, and yet very few people are allowed to come into the marketplace of ideas and track this trail of supremacist logic and the rationale for mass murder back to the Talmudic text. Until we do that, until we have the courage and scholarship to do it, we're going to be running in circles, chasing our tails with a lot of rhetoric condemning Israeli aggression, and the American people are almost oblivious to it. But right. If a lot of these Christians could understand that Judaism is an anti-Old Testament religion that defames Abraham, that says that Abraham was filled with lust, that says that Noah was a drunk, that says that Isaiah, the prophet Isaiah, deserved to be killed and, in fact, was killed by the followers of the oral tradition, because Isaiah had made the mistake of saying that Israel has unclean lips. And for that, the Talmud says that he was quite rightly killed. And this is when Jesus says, if you recall, he says that you are witnesses against yourselves. This is obviously a reference to Jesus' knowledge of the oral law, where in the oral law, which came to be written down after they crucified the Messiah of Israel, and they became even more corrupt, and then they committed the oral law.
Okay, let me switch a little bit on this. It is also worth noting that there are approximately 35 million American Christians who identify with Zionism, in fact, call themselves Christian Zionists. That's a pretty scary number. But beyond that, This then helps those of us who study history, especially the last century, grasp the reason, perhaps, behind the starting of two world wars by financiers from Wall Street and others who were in high positions. They don't, and I'm going to go back to what you said earlier, that this ecstatic embracing of the mass deaths of non-Jews is part and parcel of why over 100 million people died in the last century. And if you trace the financing of World War I and World War II, in fact, in World War II, as you well know, I think, Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the village idiot, was involved in financing the Germans. The Wall Street bankers were involved with financing both sides. We had the Bolshevik Jewish element in the Soviet Union. This whole mass execution of humanity is something sought after and reveled in by a certain portion of these very people you're talking about.
And it all depends on an intellectual hoax, because as I said about the anti-biblical nature of Judaism, and then you have these characters inside Judaism. I'll give you an example, Rabbi Moses Maimonides, who has tremendous prestige in the Christian world. He's considered a sober and prudent judge, and as someone who's greatly admired by Western intellectuals, both liberal and conservative, and yet in his more or less esoteric teachings, for example, in Avodat Kovakim, chapter 10, he says, show no mercy to a non-Jew. And this is someone, and he also says that Christians should be killed. This is someone who is being held up to us as a great paradigm of Judaism. And if we had more time, Jeff, I would have gone into the Gezara Shava, which is this very strange hermeneutical principle for nullifying the Old Testament. It's woven through the Talmudic text, and a lot of people believe, because rabbis have mastery of languages, and of course they're often very voluble and articulate, mm-hmm. that they think that that's a stand-in for genuine biblical erudition. And in fact, Judaism is a trap, as Jesus pointed out, for confusing people into this diabolical system where they actually know less about the Old Testament than a good, solid Christian scholar would, because they're constantly deceiving themselves in order to mislead the Judaic people, who, as I try to point out in my book, and I think it's also been a thread that you've pursued, are the greatest victims of Judaism. The first and greatest victims of Judaism are the Judaics themselves, who are trapped inside the stultifying and sadistic system.
Absolutely correct. Would you like to come back?
Surely.
Well, I've got openings on the 13th and 14th. Why don't you let me know if either one of those will work for you in the next day or two, and we'll have you back. I'd love to continue the conversation, Michael.
Well, thank you very much, Jeff. It's been good to be here.
It's been extraordinary. My guest has been Michael Hoffman. His book is Judaism Discovered, available at his website of revisionisthistory.org, 1,100 pages. One of the truly most important books of our time, and in essence a key to helping all of us understand what's going on around us and where we are headed. A final comment from you, Michael, 30 seconds.
I guess my final comment would be to make people aware of this patriot issue, of this Israeli issue, of the anti-Semitism issue, by going back to a story in the Old Testament, which is when the prophet Elijah faced off against King Ahab. What happened? King Ahab accused Elijah of being anti-Israel. The corrupt, wicked king used the patriot card and used the anti-Semitic card to accuse a great prophet of being anti-Israel. Let us not fear to have that label attached to us when we're telling the truth.
Very good. Thank you, Michael. I look forward to our next conversation.
Same here. Thanks, Jeff.
Good night. Michael Hoffman, extraordinary effort to produce a book of this magnitude, and by virtue of its being blacklisted, you know it's worthy. Be right back. Okay, welcome back. And coming back this hour for his second visit, part two of our conversation, Michael Hoffman, the author of the absolutely unprecedented volume, and I mean it is a big book. It's over 1,000 pages long. It's entitled Judaism Discovered. This book, of course, has been blacklisted by every major Zionist-controlled news media outlet, probably in the Western world, if not the entire world. It's quite a compliment. Hello, Michael.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, welcome back.
Thanks.
What's going on with this this story of yours in light of the exposition, shall we say, the unavoidable, obvious exposition of the simple fact that the Zionist Jewish state of Israel is anything but the wonderful, friendly little democracy in the Middle East that has commanded so many hundreds of billions of American taxpayer dollars and, of course, has been using its past sufferings to dupe and deceive much of the Western world into supporting it and allowing it to get away with what amounts to bloody murder.
Well, you know, for me, Jeff, the root of the whole thing is in the religion of Orthodox Judaism, and a key factor here would be the otherwise incomprehensible treatment of the Palestinians, because they really are being treated as less than human. And if you don't have the key to the enigma, which is lies in my book and with any scholarly knowledge, considerable scholarly knowledge of the religion of Orthodox Judaism, you're probably going to be confused, because it just doesn't make sense for any nation to treat another nation the way the Israelis are treating the Palestinians. And people come up with all kinds of angles and explanations on it, whether it's Zionism, colonialism, imperialism, the proxy of the United States cryptocracy, or whatever. But I think all of those, they may be true to a certain extent, do not actually answer the question, which is, why would, by what means, and what rationale would the Israelis mistreat the Palestinians to the extent that they are? And the rest of the world, the Western world, that is, largely shrug their shoulders.
They're liquidating them, is what they're doing. This is certainly a reasonable overlay of the Fallujah-type template. They're not razing Gaza City to the ground, at least not yet. But it appears to be a liquidation, another what was done to the American indigenous peoples. They're taking what's left of the land that these poor people are pushed into, and they're going to resettle it. They're already declaring a permanent buffer zone will be set up, meaning they're acquiring more of Gaza. It'll be smaller and smaller. I see this as an extermination.
Yes, they're shooting people who are waving white flags, who've been told to evacuate their homes. Then once they go to an evacuation locale, they're gunned down there because they've actually been tricked into leaving the comparative safety of their homes.
Right.
And then once they've been exposed to the gun sights of the Israeli army, they can be shot down with impunity.
We see the world going to the streets. Really hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people have demonstrated around the world about this. And yet the governments of the Arab world and certainly the Western governments largely remain silent or apologist in their mode and their contemporary view of this, formal official contemporary view of this slaughter. It is rather an interesting dichotomy when you think about it. It does show an astonishing control element at some level of a very great and vast amount of the world as we know it.
Well, they are succeeding to a certain extent. In the long term, they're going to fail, because you cannot defeat a nation. And this is one of the truisms of wiser and cooler heads in statecraft. You cannot defeat a nation by force of arms short of outright extermination. And so what you really have in the short term then is the winning of the Hasbara, or propaganda war, which the Israelis and their Zionist fellow travelers in Hollywood and New York are past masters at. And as a result of that and a lot of financial chicanery and other means, they have gotten on board the governments of Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Egypt. But I think there's going to be a bitter price to pay for that in the future for these nations. And, of course, I am talking about armed resistance and uprising. But, unfortunately, even that synthesis or antithesis to the thesis will result in a synthesis which the cryptocracy is anticipating, in that they love violence, they feed on violence, and they're actually looking for some kind of Al-Qaeda type of reaction by whereby they can justify an increased police state here in the United States. And, of course, as you know, this morning, The ghost of Osama bin Laden was dutifully summoned to the streets of Gaza, where he could hold forth.
Another fake audio release. The guy's been dead for years, probably, and here he is again, coming to the rescue of the Talmudists, so to speak. It's pretty obscene.
Well, that's about the only card they have to play right now, because the others are being exhausted. Yesterday on CNN, there was a fairly substantive broadcast on the use of white phosphorus, including graphic footage of some of the child victims of that.
Oh.
And then the Israelis answered by moving their pieces on the chessboard, and they have now seemed to have inordinately influenced the head of the Red Cross in the Israeli state, who has issued some denials of that. However, in an internet age and in a video age, a picture is worth 10,000 denials. And when CNN was actually showing the pictures of these horrific burns, it's pretty easy to see that the Israelis are once again, in keeping with the rabbinic penchant for lying and institutionalizing lying, as I tried to show in my book.
Yes, and you
they're simply lying about it.
Extraordinary. We have, of course, at Rents.com a picture by David Dees of one of these just charred pieces of humanity. The Israelis have obviously less than even a remote concern for the humanity they're decimating. None. There's something wrong with a mindset, a mentality. They do revel, it seems, in death. They embrace it. They get off on it. They get high on it. They shoot these people as if they're lower animals. There's no question about that. It's a bizarre thing to see, and it's been going on for 60 years. And yet, for the first time, I don't know why, Shabra and Shatila, we have all these other examples, the world is really seeing it without seeing it, because the press have been banned from Gaza by the Israelis, not even letting them in there. And yet still the world is able to see and get enough of a picture that the Israel lobby has been dealt an enormous blow, at least in terms of the populist mentality on the planet.
I think they have, but at the same time, if the people who are concerned do not do something in a sustained manner along the lines of what's been done to commemorate the World War II so-called Holocaust, for example, where these things are actually part of the fabric of the West in terms of memorials and commemorations, films and movies, cultural institutes, government enterprises, and so forth. Without that, what I have found as an observer on this scene for some 26, 28 years is that there is a momentary shock and awe at the savagery of the Israelis, and then with the passing of time, it's either forgotten or the cryptocracy is able to put forth some Arab patsies who commit some commensurate outrage, then all of the memory is on that outrage and forgetting that it was actually retribution for a previous massacre, which is then down the Orwellian memory hole.
Of course, and that's the reason the bottle rockets were being fired into Israel, because the Israelis had begun to shut everything down, cutting off food, medical supplies, basic necessities of life, forcing this little pittance of a response. Now, if a rocket were to hit an Israeli school and kill four or five school children, the deaths of those four or five school children would be blown up graphically in the international Zionist/Israeli sympathetic or owned media. And all of a sudden, the 1,000-plus men, women, and children who have been slaughtered in Gaza by the Israelis would be equal at best to the loss of four or five Jewish children in a school should a rocket ever hit one. I mean, that's the kind of thing I think you're talking about.
Absolutely. If 1,000 Israelis were dead, thousands wounded, and about one-third of those casualties being children, we would not see the kind of trivialization and business as usual that we're seeing in the West today. In fact, it could even be that President-elect Obama would either actually incorporate it into his inauguration speech, or I could even envision him postponing the inauguration. I mean, that's the extent
that's
of
true.
The worldwide outcry when a master race is being victimized. But when you have these individuals in Palestine who are on the receiving end of the violence of the master race, then, of course, it's barely a blip on the screen. Except that, the exception being that we are in this internet age where independent media is really, and you're an example of it, is really on the ball here, and that does make a difference. But it's going to be a long haul, and it's going to mean that we have to do more than sit in front of our computers. I think that the British have been way ahead of us in that they've gotten out into the streets and they've had massive protests. But also it involves everything, diplomacy, edutainment, entertainment, communication, the universities, yeah. Everything. And also, can it ever be that the Israelis would be dragged in front of the European war crimes courts the way the Serbs were? Or can it ever be that there would be an ironclad boycott and divestment such as was targeted against the whites of South Africa? Without really tough measures like that, I really believe that the Israelis relish and revel in this kind of defiance of the world. Once again, as you pointed out, there is this mentality.
Hold on, Michael. We'll pick that up in just a minute. Okay, talking with Michael Hoffman. Michael, you were just starting to say we had to take a break. As you pointed out, do you remember where you were on that?
Well, I'm talking about this mentality of paranoia and anticipatory violence where right. They anticipate the reaction of their enemies. And also the warrant for genocide on our website, Jeff, at www.revisionisthistory.org. We have a statement from the Jerusalem Post from the former Sephardic chief rabbi Mordecai Elihu, and I quote, "All civilians living in Gaza are collectively guilty for Qassam attacks on Sderot," says the former chief rabbi. And his son, Shmuel Elihu, who was chief rabbi of Safed, said his father advocated carpet bombing the general area from which the rockets were launched, regardless of the price.
Correct.
In Palestinian life, end quote. So this is the equivalent of a fatwa. We hear so much about a fatwa being issued by some imam to commit some atrocity against the West. What about these religious dictates that are given to the Orthodox soldiers in the Israeli army and those in the political arena who are interested in garnering favor with these very powerful rabbis? What about the effects of this in terms of how the Israelis wage the war that they're waging against the Palestinians, completely policed out of analysis of Israel's war, counterfeit Israel's war on Gaza?
Wow. It summed up perfectly. By the way, if you folks still haven't gotten onto it, just watch your mainstream media apologize for Israel and underestimate, underrate, and downright obfuscate the reality of the slaughter that's going on there. This is beyond hideous. The number one story in the Google News page right now, Apple computer well positioned to race forward while Steve Jobs sidelined. Hey, this is the number one story. Okay, there you go. What we have here is an event going on that is unfolding that probably will not lead to any kind of definitive victory for either side, but in a de facto sense, the Palestinians have already won. In the world court of public opinion, the Jews, the Zionist Jews, the Israeli Jews, some would call them the Zionist Nazi Jews because of their tactics, which are identical to the World War II alleged tactics of Germany and its allies, is already on the books. It's there. It's quite an interesting thing to see happen, in a way. And thanks for the Internet, because without it, we would have really no idea of what's going on there. They would be able to bring the lid down on this completely.
Yes, and the future is really very bad for the Israelis and the Zionists. They have to be out of their mind to pursue this against not just 1.5 million people in Gaza, but the Palestinians in the West Bank, the Palestinians who live in the Israeli state proper.
Well, they just outlawed two Arab parties in Israel. They won't let them participate in the system. I mean, this is probably the world's most racist country, without question, and yet it gets away with being portrayed as some kind of a democratic friend of the United States. I mean, it's a joke.
The only democracy in the Middle East, and it also has built into it from its very founding a special supreme place for those of Jewish descent, and also in the courts, the religious courts and the courts which govern the daily life of the people and conversions are in the hands of the Orthodox rabbinate, and that's something that David Ben-Gurion stipulated at the very founding of the Israeli state. So the notion that they have a separation of church and state or some type of Jeffersonian ideals of democracy is risible. There's no question about it. But ultimately, they're either if there are any cooler heads over there, I'm sure there are. I'm sure there's decent people over there.
They're demonstrating, some of them, yeah.
But some of them are, yes. And they would realize that it's not a two-state solution. It's going to have to be a one-state solution. And
that's totally right.
And this exceptionalism where there's one country in the world that's actually able to have racial and religious supremacy, they're going to have to forfeit that. And if they won't, and most likely they will not because the fanatics are in control, short of a miracle of God, we're going to see relentless bloodshed, which could lead us to a nuclear war. It could lead us to all kinds of terrorism directed against the American people.
Yeah.
It's really a mess. And also, we're also seeing a hardening of the lines of resistance in terms of the Palestinian people who historically have been both Christian and Muslim, but a very moderate, a much larger Christian population than at present, because
all
many
true.
Of them have grown discouraged at the so-called Judeo-Christians, who have basically sided with the Zionists rather than Christians.
Right.
And then you also had a very moderate, among the most moderate in the entire Arab world, Muslims, who were very secular-oriented, very fond of the United States.
Oh, they westernized,
But, pardon me?
They were westernized, very much so.
Yes, very advanced, and we have radicalized all these people. I think the radicalization process is deliberate because both the Israelis and the American cryptocracy do not want a partner for peace.
No, and they need the rockets, too. Let's not forget that for a minute.
They need the rockets, and they need the Temple Mount, which is the great dream of the Masonic lodges to seize control of the Haram el-Sharif and reestablish the Third Temple. All of this is part of an apocalyptic scenario, which is outside of Islam. It's not being caused by Islam. It's being caused by these extra Islamic factors, which are manipulating these people. It's a grotesque, blood-drenched scenario, Jeff.
Totally agree. Michael Hoffman, my guest, his book, it's an astonishing achievement, Judaism Discovered from Its Own Texts. A study of the anti-biblical religion of racism, self-worship, superstition, and deceit. It's just an amazing, amazing book, over 1,000 pages. Tells the whole story in the words of the texts themselves. Be right back with Michael. Visiting with Michael Hoffman and talking about current issues, his book as a backdrop, not only for this issue, but for all issues in the future and the past. This is the definitive book. Nothing will ever be published, in my opinion, that can touch it. Judaism Discovered from Its Own Texts. Its Own Texts. Crucially important to understand that. Associated Press continues to apologize for Israel. It's an obscenity. There's a story in the Telegraph in the UK showing Bibi Netanyahu saying, Hamas must be removed from Gaza. This, of course, the ultimate exterminationist war hawk. And there's a photo, a large photo of him from AP, looking out the window of an Israeli kindergarten said to be damaged by a rocket fired by Palestinian militants from inside the Gaza Strip. Now, this interesting picture, because he's looking out an open window, both frames of the window, which are sliders left to right, are intact. The glass isn't even broken. The little bit of the mortar on the outside is chipped, and he's got this terribly dour look on his face, and it goes on and on. We've seen it. The so-called Hamas fighters, soldiers, are gunmen. It's all a matter of semantic manipulation. They're gunmen. Gunmen. What are gunmen? They're not freedom fighters. They're not resistance fighters. They're not fighting to try to secure what little tiny foothold on a human living situation that they have. They're called gunmen, i.e. criminals. And yet the criminality, of course, is being perpetrated upon them by their neighbors. the white phosphorus dropping new weapons testing Israeli so-called defense forces. Nothing defensive about what's going on here now at all, in the opinion of most of the world. Okay, let's go back to your book now and talk about the part of the title, the subtitle, it's not a subtitle, but the second part of the title, from its own texts. There have been many stories on the Internet citing texts and quotes from the Talmud, which apologists and others are quick to say have been mistranslated. What are people to make of that kind of effort to obfuscate the reality and totality of these texts? How errant are the translations of the old Talmud?
Well, they try to say that, and they try to say that the Talmud is just a collection of debates. It's not actually authoritative. It's actually an indication of how democratic and freewheeling Judaism really is. All of this preys on the ignorance of people, including many Judaics themselves who have never seen the Talmud and have only perhaps read some extracts from it in a magazine or newspaper or something like
may
that.
May I modify that, or not amplify it, rather, just real quickly. I got an email from an Israeli who's talking about exactly what you just mentioned. He said, regarding the Talmud, I studied it a little bit in school when I was a kid. Now, this guy's a military veteran. I was extremely horrified in recent years to learn on the Internet the true nature of the Talmud. The average Israeli never read the Talmud and has no idea what it's all about. We always left it to religious nuts, and now we're paying for it. So there you go.
Well, that's interesting because, of course, I did have some Judaic help with my book. And what people don't realize is not only this secular gentleman who really didn't have very much training, but some of the ones who are most hostile and most angry are those who are trapped inside Orthodox Judaism, the Bakurim, the Talmidim, the ones who are in the yeshiva. And they're there because grandma or grandpa, their bubby, is paying their way through, or they want to marry a girl who's Orthodox, or they just don't have a way out, and they're trapped inside of there. There's a great deal of anger because this is a religion of oppression, not only of Palestinians and other Gentiles, but beginning with the Judaics themselves. But to answer your question, we have a very good translation for those who do not read Aramaic in the original, and that's the Steinsaltz translation, which unfortunately Random House stopped about just a little bit more than midway through the publication. Random House stopped it for reasons that have never been clear, and of course we could speculate as to what those reasons are. But nonetheless, there are 21 volumes of the Steinsaltz Talmud that are available out of what one could generalize and say approximately 35 volumes of the Gemara. The Talmud is actually comprised of two sets of books, the Mishnah, which corresponds to the oral tradition that Jesus confronted when it was still oral and hadn't been committed to writing. And then when Israel became really corrupt by crucifying their Messiah, as a symptom of that corruption, they committed this oral tradition, which had haunted them for centuries, to writing in the form of the Mishnah, thereby institutionalizing it. And then after the Mishnah, from the 2nd to the 4th century onward came the Gemara, and those books together are collectively known as the Talmud. But one of the things I try to point out in my book, Jeff, is that there are many more authoritative texts which have followed up on these, because when you're the old saw about, oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive. Well, the web of Judaism is very tangled indeed, and it goes all the way up to the Mishnah Berurah commentaries and authoritative halakha, which is still being written to this day. So you're actually talking about hundreds and hundreds of compendiums of books related to literally millions of laws.
Wow. That's a gigantic amount of material.
It's an enormous compendium. And then what we try to focus on in the beginning of Judaism Discovered is on the roots of the halakha itself. In other words, to document what is the law, the halakha of Orthodox Judaism. It certainly isn't the Old Testament. As Jesus himself said in Mark chapter 7, you nullify the word of God. You teach for doctrine the commandments of men, because that's what it actually is. It's the religion of men, the Torah Shebel Peh, which is their Torah, not the Torah of Yahweh. And the roots of this halakha are in the Mishnah, they're in the Gemara, they're also in the Zohar, they're in the of the Kabbalah, they're in the Mishnah Torah of Maimonides, they're in the Tur, that's T-U-R, of the Rosh, Rabbi Asher ben Yechiel, and I could go on, the Shulchan Aruch of Joseph Caro, and many others of these, which are, they're a living document to these people today, and they rule every aspect of their lives. One of the things I point out in the book is how regimented Judaic women are, for example, with regard to their menstrual period and the time after the period, how neurotic they have to be about any spotting of blood, how both the husband and wife have to be virtually psychotic in spotting this blood. The rabbi can be called in to examine the woman's underclothing. I mean, the whole thing is a compendium of insanity. And I've often said that Freud, the Freudian psychology is actually directed at the Talmudic mentality and not the Gentile mentality, because most of his patients were coming out of this insane asylum and were victims of it. And that's where he got a lot of his really far-out concepts about penis envy and Oedipus complexes and so forth. It comes straight out of a Talmudic mentality.
Remarkable. All right. Be right back with the amazing scholar and historian Michael Hoffman. Okay, and guests just below Michael Hoffman's name. By the way, you can click on Michael's name and go right to his website. The two parts of the review of his book by Brother Nathaniel Kapner, Raised a Jew, Now a Christian. Very interesting. One of the quotes in the interview, continuing his censure, Hoffman illustrates how the, quote, Israeli citizen, end quote, presents to the world the image of the aggressive killer, no longer possessing the, quote, exiled, hunted Jew image. The Israeli is now the hunter and exile of others. Expanding on this new image of the Jew, Hoffman writes that in the third world, the Jew is no longer viewed as the passive and pitiable scholar whose beard is yanked by the jackbooted Nazi. Instead, he is rather perceived to be himself the jackbooted Zio-Nazi. What's the difference between the alleged excesses of Nazi Germany and what's going on in the West Bank today?
Yes, indeed. And also, what would be the difference between the Israeli and American policy toward civilian populations and what the Allies visited on Japan and German civilian populations in World War II? I think that
Precisely.
There's a parallel there.
Yeah.
You can see it today in today's New York Times. The January 14th New York Times has a very interesting column. It's ladled with some doublespeak. It's by Tom Friedman, the great cheerleader of the Iraq War, and basically a vigorous supporter of all the Israeli wars. But in his column today, Jeff, I recommend that everybody go on the New York Times website and take a peek at it. He's actually, in a very subtle way, somewhat indirectly, he's talking about the necessity of inflicting collateral casualties on the Palestinians the way the Israelis did it in Lebanon in 2006. He says, quote, the only long-term source of deterrence was to exact enough pain on the civilians. That's when Lebanese civilians in anguish said to Hezbollah, what were you thinking? Look what destruction you visited on our community. And he draws a corollary there. He goes on to say, by inflicting a heavy death toll on Hamas militants and heavy pain on the Gaza population, end quote. And of course, if you and I have been discussing here earlier, this actually doesn't have that effect. It radicalizes the population. But what kind of makes my hair stand on end is that in an era of touchy-feely sentimentality and protection of every minority from the whales and the seals to our fellow human beings, and all of whom should be protected, and yet at the same time we have this extraordinary exceptionalism where we can practice the most naked kind of aggression in terms of intimidating, humiliating, and indeed extirpating right. a population of Arabs and Palestinians, and it's done with impunity. These people are actually the grave diggers. If I were a Judaic, I would be ashamed, embarrassed, and would want to hide under my bed if these people were my spokesmen, because as I have pointed out, the image of the Judaic, especially in the third world, perhaps not so much under the hypnotic sway of Hollywood and New York in the first world, But in the third world that's once removed from that entertainment industry, you really do have a picture of Judaics as aggressors. And people like Thomas Friedman, flagship columnist for the flagship Zionist newspaper, the New York Times, are really basically giving a black eye both to the Israelis and Judaics in general, and also are visiting upon them what's going to be a Masada complex. This is it's extremely destructive.
Oh, yeah. There are so many. I'm trying to stay on top of this 24/7 since the invasion and attack on these poor people began. With all the stories I can grab around the world, and there are some really amazing things to read there, which you won't find in any of the American mainstream controlled Zionist press. It won't happen. One of the more interesting was how Olmert is alleged to have ordered Bush, actually pulled him off the stage over the telephone to talk to him, to have him instruct that the U.S. vote be turned to an abstention in the U.N. Regarding a ceasefire and so forth. The bragging, the arrogance, the supreme elitism of God's chosen people knows no bounds. I mean, they don't even hide it anymore. They just boast about it. It's amazing. I want to go back to Michael's book here, Judaism Discovered, and there are so many quotes here that we've heard about and seen over the years at Rents.com and other websites that you go into detail on and really nail down. The authority of the Talmud is discussed, the Talmud of the toilet. I'm going to read some chapter headings here for you so you get an idea of the length and breadth of this book, which really should be read by anyone, and especially Jews or Jewish Americans, to try to understand what's really going on with this issue. The superiority of the Jews, the inferiority of the Gentiles. Gentile, not a brother or a neighbor. Jews may kill non-Jews. Forbidden to praise a Gentile. Gentiles not to be trusted. The Talmud and women. Christians in the Talmud. Jesus in the Talmud. Blame the Romans, anyone but the Pharisees. Child molestation in the religion of Judaism. Sexual intercourse with little girls is permissible. Genocide advocated by the Talmud. And I'll stop there. But you get an idea. All of this is investigated, analyzed, and presented at the highest levels of true scholarship and journalism. And it's left to you to make your own decisions. So this book, again, is a classic. It has been blacklisted. It won't be reviewed in the New York Times. You can count on that, or anywhere else to speak of, and the big mainstream Zionist press, they won't touch it for obvious reasons. Are they still in the business of trying to cover up all of this stuff, or are they just kind of leaving it to rattle around on its own on the Internet, not too worried about it?
Well, they have a website that's dedicated to refuting my earlier little book, Judaism Strange Gods. I haven't seen much movement to actually refute this, because whereas word of mouth is strong on my book, and thanks to folks like you, that word of mouth is increasing day by day. But at the same time, they've been able to clamp down a pretty tight lid through most of their other venues. So they haven't had to deal with this book, which I think will be pretty difficult for them to handle. But with my earlier book, there was a website that was dedicated to refuting it, but they never actually named me or named the book. They simply quoted from it. That's how fearful they were of giving it any publicity at all, because you know, one of the things I'm trying to do in this work, the title headings there that you gave out are fairly incendiary, and people might think it's a work of purple prose or something like that.
No,
or
not
stock
at all.
Epithet.
It doesn't read like that at all.
But what I've tried to do is, as the subtitle of the book says, from its own text, and that's where I hope that what renders my own book irrefutable is because I'm using their sources throughout. And I've also verified the sources so that there's no false attributions or misquotes. And if I might, Jeff, just to remind folks that since it's very difficult to obtain my book, they can get it directly from our website, either by U.S. mail with a check or money order, or with a Visa or MasterCard. And that's at www.revisionisthistory.org. That's all one word, www.revisionisthistory.org. .org, and when you get there, just click on News Bureau, and you'll go right to it.
There are so many fascinating quotes that I've, over the years, been able to present from time to time, but many I haven't. I just can't get to them. There are too many. President Harry Truman observed, quote, "The Jews, I find, are very, very selfish. They care not how many Estonians, Latvians, Finns, Poles, Yugoslavs, or Greeks get murdered or mistreated as displaced persons, as long as the Jews get their special treatment. Yet when they have power, physical, financial, or political, neither Hitler nor Stalin has anything on them for cruelty or mistreatment to the underdog." This is all here. And, of course, they would say that Truman was an anti-Semite. Well, the pathetically amusing part of this whole slaughter going on the West Bank now in Gaza is that the Semitic peoples are the ones who are being slaughtered. That's the funny part, if it's funny. Most of the Jews, of course, who run Israel are Khazarian. They're white-skinned, European origin. You don't find many actually Semitic peoples there, in the upper levels of government, that is. So we have throughout history, and it's so well documented in the book, people speaking candidly and openly about this problem. And that is not to say that all Jews are like this. We've got to make that clear time and time again. There are many Jews who are repulsed by this kind of behavior, mindset, arrogance, elitism. And again, if anybody out there thinking can't figure out that there's a problem when a group of people claims that they have been chosen by God as being special, you got a problem.
Well, we have a problem in the United States because we have these crypto rabbis who call themselves Christian preachers who are completely overturning the New Testament and Jesus' mission on earth, and thereby identifying with exactly this evil. By the way, Jeff, that quote from Harry Truman was unfortunately from his private diary. He never articulated those sentiments in public.
Mm-hmm. One sentence before that, even incitement to medical murder by willful neglect cannot be blamed on the rabbis. It is the Gentiles' fault that Judaics want to kill them. This is amazing. The preceding statement, writes Michael Hoffman, is the Talmudic mentality purely distilled.
Wow. Which is a reference to Maimonides ordering that medical treatment be withheld from Gentiles.
Right. Right.
Where it is politic to do so. It's very important to add that situation ethics to these various rabbinic enactments because they're very sensitive to whether or not Judaics have a supreme or inferior position in society, and they adjust their tactics and laws accordingly.
Well, as we look at the carnage in Gaza and Gaza City, doctors are being killed, medics are being targeted. It just goes on and on. Water is cut off now to almost 1 million people. This is not human behavior.